Welcome to Bikescape, episode number 71, February 28th, 2009. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Bikescape. Coming to you this month from Kowloon, Hong Kong, in the southern part of China. Just visiting family here, and I'm putting together a Bikescape episode here at the same time. Hong Kong, if you don't know, it's got 7 million people in it, but it's 70% uninhabited. At the moment, I'm standing in Mong Kok, which is the most densely populated part of the most densely populated city in the world. In fact, at the place where I'm standing, in the square kilometer around me, there are 200,000 people in that area. Compare that to Manhattan, where 27,000 people live in a square mile. So it's a very dense, very populous place, and people have learned to get along. They're able to transport themselves, feed themselves, and house themselves in this amazingly dense place. Yet they're able to maintain an excellent quality of life. They have a modern subway, they have parks and green space and open space, and despite the size of the buildings, the streets have a certain kind of human scale to them that make for uniquely livable and complete streets. At the moment, I'm standing on Temple Street. It's about a block away from Nathan Road, which is the Broadway of Kowloon. It's just this massive boulevard with buses and cars and trucks and thousands of people and big wide sidewalks. But here, it's a narrow street and is closed off to cars, people walking everywhere. There are tables and umbrellas and people sitting out and eating.
And people are putting up, it's now almost 1 o'clock, and people are starting to put up their stalls for the night market on Temple Street, which they set up every night. You can buy all sorts of cheap things, ties, underwear, socks, cell phones, batteries, bootleg software. Here's a place where the Curry Corner, Indian and Nepali food. I think I'll ask.
Yes, sir.
Hi, you speak English?
Yes, please.
I'm doing a radio show. How does your food and supplies come into the shop with no cars, no trucks on the street?
No, we don't bring too much. They bring by bicycle.
Hand trucks?
Small
carts.
Small carts, yeah.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah.
So that everything comes in. Do you like working on a street with no cars?
No, better? No.
You'd rather have cars?
No, we have, no, they bring, you know, they buy from them, they bring their own.
I see. Do you like it like this? Is it good?
Yeah.
Okay, thank
you.
Yes,
man.
Well, here I am on the MTR, Hong Kong's ultra-modern subway system. I'm going from Kowloon Island, from the Mong Kok neighborhood, down to Wan Chai, which is a neighborhood on Hong Kong Island. I'm going to meet Martin Turner from the Hong Kong Cycling Association and have lunch with him and maybe get a little conversation in to record. This subway is just beautiful. It's super modern, as I said. It's more like a horizontal elevator than a subway. The platform is totally glassed off, big glass walls between the tracks and the platform. When the train comes in, there's a muted whoosh, and the sliding glass doors open on the platform in unison with the train doors, and you walk into these beautifully clean, sleek trains. The MTR, or the Mass Transit Rail is what it stands for, was built in 1979, although you wouldn't know it. It looks like it was built yesterday. The trains come every 2 or 3 minutes, so there's no waiting. And when you step in, there's a lighted map over each door that shows every stop and little dotted lights that let you know exactly where you are on the map. And when you cross another line, the entire transfer line links on and off, so you know when to get off. You don't have to listen to announcements too much. But the announcements are in two or sometimes three languages, Cantonese, Mandarin, and English. And it's quite a treat for us transit geeks. Unfortunately, you're not allowed to bring your bike on board. But so few people ride their bikes in this town that it doesn't seem to be an issue. And because it isn't an issue, I've heard from various people that it's really not a big deal to bring your bike on the train. Nobody will really say anything to you, but I guess you always have to take your chances that somebody's going to kick you out. Well, in what seems like no time at all, we cross Victoria Harbor, we're on Hong Kong Island in Wan Chai, and I'm going to go check in with the director of Hong Kong Bicycle Association, Martin Turner, and see what he has to say. We're here in a Hong Kong restaurant with Martin Turner of the Hong Kong Cycling Alliance. Welcome to Bikescape.
Thank you.
Do you want to start up? I'm curious. I've been here for 2 weeks, so I have my own impressions. But what's the state of bike culture in Hong Kong from your perspective? You've been here 15 years, and you've been riding a bike during that whole time?
No, not true, actually. I mean, I've ridden a bike my whole life, but for a few years in Hong Kong, I kind of forgot about it.
Anyway. You grew up in England, and you did...
You were there. I cycle everywhere, and really, even as an adult, I've always been a cyclist.
What's the state of cycling culture here? Is there a cycling culture?
It's a difficult question to answer. There's a lot of cycling going on. There's a lot of enthusiastic cyclists, a lot of clubs, and... In addition, there are a lot of people who cycle for transportation to get around. But it's a mixed picture. Before we get on to talking about the government's position and attitudes, Hong Kong Island and Kowloon, the urban areas, are different from the new territories, and especially the new towns in the new territories.
Mm-hmm. New territories being part of Hong Kong, but not... Expand on that a little bit.
Right, well, that's a less densely populated area.
It's still part of the SAR, though. It's
absolutely.
Special administrative region.
Yeah. That is... most of the towns there have been built from greenfield sites, pretty much, over the last 20 or 30 years. And most of those include cycle tracks, which sounds wonderful, and they are pretty widely used. In the urban areas, the older areas of Kowloon and Hong Kong, there are no cycling, there's no cycling provision, lanes, tracks, and a very unwelcoming motor vehicle population, and a very unwelcome attitude from many other quarters as well. But just sticking with ordinary people, a lot of people do feel, non-cyclists, that the urban areas are not appropriate for cycling.
But those that's of us differs who, from the rest of China.
Well, China has its own history. You know, the world's greatest cycling nation. Still, 70 million bicycles a year are sold in China. But in the cities, which is what perhaps most Westerners see, there's been a reversal as the old cycling, huge wide cycling lanes either side of the city thoroughfares have been taken over for buses and vehicles, and cycling has been officially downgraded.
The cars in Shanghai, Shenzhen, Beijing.
Yeah, in all the big cities. So that's over the last 15 years. But perhaps in the last 2 or 3 years, we get a re-reversal as cities such as Shanghai, at government level and local activist groups, are seeing the bicycle as a wonderful means of local transport, environmentally sound, healthy, flexible, all the things we know it to be. So China, flip-flopping is perhaps the wrong word, but there's been a mass movement away from the bike in these cities, not in the countryside, and then in some cities there's now some awareness of, you know, from a what I might call a modern perspective, a reversal underway. Let's hope so.
But in Hong Kong, it's different.
In Hong Kong, it's completely different. Where, for 150 years, it's it's had its own sort of city status and pride, and I don't know, perhaps under the British administration, the focus was on trade and commerce, and the bicycle became in Hong Kong, in many people's eyes, a representative of a lack of wealth. In the cycling, to come back to your question, in the cycling community, there are mostly people who are cycling for pleasure, for sport. They're either road racers or mountain bikers. They are pursuing a hobby. They're the ones who are aware of cycling, who have a cycling consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Myself, I'm a utilitarian cyclist, and in the Hong Kong Cycling Alliance, we are people who care about the rights of cyclists and encouraging cycling and changing the government's attitude to promote and recognise cycling and enable existing cyclists to have their rides, and to promote cycling and encourage it so that more people can benefit, both those cyclists who are getting around faster and economically and healthily, and the general public who don't have to suffer quite so many fumes.
So you're promoting the bicycle as a sport, as a hobby, as well as a everyday transportation?
Hong Kong Cycling Alliance is primarily concerned with cycling as transportation.
Uh-huh.
But you know, many of the same people who are involved and many of our friends are interested in cycling as sport.
Uh-huh.
And hence, you know, many of the clubs in Hong Kong, many of the cycling groups, you know, have their interest. They go touring, or they're racing, or they're kit fanatics. And they have their world. And then they are very happy to support many of the actions we take, and many of them are individuals at the forefront of promoting cycling. But as groups, they tend to be somewhat isolated. They have their own activities.
Mm-hmm.
And so Hong Kong Cycling Alliance serves as a sort of umbrella group. We bring together those individuals, and we get strong support.
And how many people on staff? Is there a staff?
No, we have a fairly loose committee arrangement.
It's an NGO. 100
or 200 members, and a core committee of about 8. We act on a very ad hoc basis at the moment. We're looking to formalise that, because there is so much support amongst the community for taking stronger action.
Amongst the community that you serve?
The cycling community.
Yeah.
I mean, perhaps, okay, it's community. Let's go back and look at the public. Many people in Hong Kong have very negative attitudes towards cyclists and cycling.
And you think it's a class
ignorant
thing? Is that what...
No, it's pretty much ignorance. The best thing that could happen in Hong Kong is a simple public information campaign that says cyclists have equal rights on the road.
I have seen lots of public information campaigns.
There are many.
Let's do nice things for each other on the subway.
Absolutely.
Don't smoke, don't drink and drive.
Yeah, be nice to old people.
There are foundations that promote these kind of messages.
Mm, that's right, but we are finding very hard to get our message recognised. The transport department in Hong Kong declares to anybody who asks them that they're not concerned with cycling because cycling isn't a kind of transport.
I'm in the dark about how the government works here. I understand it's not exactly a democracy.
No,
so when you
it has pretensions of being a democracy, which means there are points of leverage that we try to work with.
So in San Francisco, we would go to the city council, the Board of Supervisors meeting, and there would be a public input session, section of the meeting where people could come and bring up issues that concern them, or they can go to hearings on particular issues, or they... What do you do here?
Well, there are no...
How do you approach the government?
There are no general public consultations. The political... Perhaps we can avoid going to the political system here, but... We tend to work at a departmental level. We deal with individual government departments, and they are very individual.
Department of Transportation, for instance.
Yeah,
the people
civil engineering department, the highways department, the police, maybe the Road Safety Council.
Mm-hmm.
But transport department are a problem. They don't want to know anything about cycling. We did get to meet them recently as a group. They initiated, after we had raised concerns about the use of fixed bollards and barriers on cycle tracks.
Mm-hmm.
There are far too many because the attitude is based on the attitude of control, limit, stop these people doing what they're doing. These children playing, their children playing on bicycles is the attitude. And so cycle tracks tend to have bollards and barriers. After you raise this issue of the dangerous bollards at a separate meeting, which I'll come to later, the transport department invited us, the cycling community, and various other government departments to talk with them, supposedly about the very specific issue of safety. Safety is an excuse here for restricting all sorts of things. But they didn't demonstrate a very positive attitude. They wanted to promote bollards, more and more bollards. However, looking elsewhere in government, we find the civil engineering development department are currently planning and designing a major network, they call it, of cycle tracks.
Really?
It's more of a linking up existing cycle tracks, but running from east to west, right across Hong Kong, new territories. And this is all based on Hong Kong being a leisure activity, or cycling being a leisure activity. Another element that I meant to raise earlier is there's this mass of ordinary folk who cycle around in the new territories, in the new towns. Mm-hmm. They are not conscious of themselves as a cycling community. They're simply people who are going to the shops on their bike, using these cycle tracks, which are available within the town. So yes, it is related. Yeah,
it doesn't seem like bike culture. It's just a way of getting around. It's just a...
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The new towns have these networks of cycle paths. The cycle paths themselves are very badly maintained, often badly designed. They are there. So my point being that this cycle track in the new territories, the new territories cycling network, as it's provisionally called, we hope to be able to influence that to recognising its role as part of the transportation network.
Is it?
And we think we're getting a hearing, so that's some progress. But we're having to kind of leverage this leisure obsession. All the government departments and many people in Hong Kong think of cycling as a leisure activity, a game, something you play occasionally.
In your wildest dreams, what would be your dream city in Hong Kong?
I tend to try and limit my wild dreaming to keep me on the ground. We're facing a pretty tough battle here. I do feel quite positive in the long term. I think there can be movement, but I'm not going to aim too high. Critical mass is a well-known cycling phenomenon around the world, and in many Western cities a lot of people turn out and have a lot of fun, have a pretty radical time, and rail against all forms of motor traffic.
Right.
And celebrate the bike. Mm-hmm. Here in Hong Kong, we certainly couldn't do that because public opinion is so unaware, and if it is aware, it's negative towards cycling, at least in large parts. And quite apart from the many, many people who do ride here, there's an undercurrent of anti-cycling. So our critical mass is about riding around in the group and being seen on the roads.
Uh-huh.
And being seen on the roads, being responsible road users. We certainly aren't going to get radical because that would simply alienate people here.
I think that's how critical mass was when it started in San Francisco.
Absolutely,
it was,
yes.
You know, that was the original, just to be together for safety originally, and then just to be seen after that.
And people do. People point. You know, even with quite a small group of cyclists, people point.
How many?
If we get 10, we're happy.
Mm-hmm. I think that's about average for most cities in the world, actually. You know, maybe 30 to 60 is probably the average.
But it's enough. I mean, the very nature of the critical mass we're talking about is about, I reckon, 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. You know, in that, at that point, drivers' attitudes change. They see a group of 4 or 5 cyclists, and you get treated as a significant entity on the road rather than a piece of garbage.
Mm-hmm.
So down to the critical mass, anything above you know, 4 or so matters. Anyway, where were we?
Your dream city.
Dreaming, yes. You mentioned the public transport system. Hong Kong is very easy to get around compared with most cities. The public transport system is good. The MTR, Underground Railway, the bus system, taxis, Taxis are everywhere. The bus system works, runs frequently all night. Trains run every 2 or 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Clean.
And clean. Everything's clean and efficient. But that said, a bike is wonderful. A bike is better.
Yeah, why? Tell me that.
It's just the basic benefits of the bike, of flexibility, efficiency. If I want to get 2 kilometres across town, it's faster on a bike, certainly, than any form of general public transport, and even a taxi very often.
And you're experiencing the city in a different way, I guess.
Well, yeah, I guess I'm not particularly trying to experience the city anymore. I just live here, but it's more efficient. It's a great way of getting around. You do have to have those urban cycling skills, which are an extra step up from regular cycling on more open roads. And everywhere has its specifics. So Hong Kong city cycling is a little different from London, New York, Paris, San Francisco. But nevertheless, it's not so different. Cycling in a city is a skill that we can all get used to.
Brian?
Yeah.
And this is Woods.
What's the name of the store?
Broda Fixer.
And I said this is a 2-year...
fixed-gear project.
What does that mean? You expect it to last only 2 years?
Yeah, yes. And because I know, I'm sure everyone knows this is a trend. Fixed-gear is a trend. Mm-hmm. And people is going to jump on it. Uh-huh. I mean, people without cycling background is going to jump on it.
Uh-huh.
And then they would just play around with it for a year or two and they would just quit.
Yeah.
I mean, because I'm from a cycling background, I've been riding bike like all my life.
Fixed gear?
Not fixed gear, but just any kind of bikes.
Right.
So I don't, like, the trend right now is doing tricks with fixed gear bikes.
Uh-huh. I saw that on the internet. It looks like that's what people use it for.
Yeah, and those who are doing tricks, most of them are not from the cycling background. Because I ask so many people with cycling background, when they ride a fixed gear, they just want to ride for fun, ride on the street, ride with the traffic.
Uh-huh. They enjoy the speed. And
They don't really care about the tricks that much. All the kids that are new to the sport, I mean new to fixed gear, and new to cycling, they're doing tricks.
Are they killing themselves?
Not yet. because there's not much you can do, not many tricks you can do, they're simple tricks, not as crazy as BMX.
Right, back home in the States, people ride them for transportation because they're really good in traffic. I don't see any bicycles on the street, and I see no bicycles. This is the only bicycle shop I've seen since I've been here. I see some delivery bikes, but
this is the problem with Hong Kong only. Our neighbors like Taiwan, Japan, Korea, they all ride bikes.
China, maybe.
Yeah, you're from Shanghai, you said, right?
Yeah, I'm from Shanghai.
Yeah.
And because people are just not used to it. I mean, the city is not built for bicycle. They don't offer any bicycle lanes, nothing.
Great.
And people are just scared riding.
Are people allowed to ride on the bike in the streets?
Yes.
But discouraged, right?
Yeah, except tunnels and bridges and other places there you are allowed to.
Can you bring your bicycle on the subway? On the MTR?
No. And they used to let you bring it on trains, but now they banned it this year. 2009, they say no more bikes on the train.
Really?
You have some customers, they come in, and what are they looking for?
Actually, yeah, I saw around... Okay, there's about 70 fixed gear riders in Hong Kong.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, most of them, like 90% of the people, got their bikes from me.
Uh-huh.
But the active ones, like active fixed gear riders, is around 10 at the moment.
Really?
People, that's the situation. People like fixed gear, they want to buy fixed gear.
Mm-hmm.
but they don't want to ride fixed gear. They just want to buy it and put it in their home. And
they thought that it's an installation devices, you know, in or decoration stuff in at home. Yeah.
Because I'm just targeting for beginners. I'm selling bikes. I'm trying to find bikes with a really, really reasonable price so people can afford it and people can try fixed gear.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you offer them on your website. What's the name of the website?
Hong Kong Fix.
So on your website, you have you can order basically the same frame for all the different bikes and the same wheels, but you get to choose different colors. And
yeah, this is one of the bikes I'm selling. It's
called the Airwalk.
Yeah, and the thing about this bike is you can pick your own colors for the frame, the wheels, and the seat, the handlebars, and the chain, and yeah, you can.
You got straight bars. Yeah. You don't use track bars.
Yeah, no. Nobody uses drop bars anymore for fixed gear.
How much are you charging for these Airwalks?
It's 3,800 Hong Kong dollars.
Which amounts to something about... That's only about 450 US, 450, something like that.
Yeah.
That's very affordable.
Yeah. So, this is a kind of bike for beginners to start. If they're interested in fixed gear, so they can get started with a reasonable price bike. And
these bikes come with brakes front and back. Is that the law? Is there a law that you have to have brakes on the bicycle? Is there any law about bicycles here?
I'm sure there is, but I'm also sure the police in Hong Kong, they don't understand brakes or no brakes. It makes no difference.
They just think, bicycle, what's it doing in the street? Yeah,
they don't really bother the bicycle people because they hardly any, so they don't care.
But
they only care. The only thing they care about is lights. When you ride the bicycle at night, you have to have front and back lights.
Lights are a good idea.
Yeah, that's all they care about. If they see you with no lights, they can give you a ticket. Yeah, that's the only thing.
So where would I want to go if I wanted to find fixed gear riders in Hong Kong? Where do they hang out?
Actually, you have to go on our forum, and there will be like news about next ride and everything.
Uh-huh.
So, other than that, there's no way to find them because there are not so many out right now.
Are there any Kirin races or any kind of track races that go on in Hong Kong?
Nothing.
Are people interested in it?
We have only one velodrome in Hong Kong.
That's good. That's one more than we have in San Francisco.
And it's an outdoor one. And the condition is really bad. Mm. And they're building another outdoor velodrome soon.
Concrete?
Yeah. Also, in a few years' time, like maybe 3 or 4 years, they're building a wooden one, indoor.
Oh, nice.
The real velodrome in a few years.
This is another sound you might hear in Hong Kong. Usually you associate Hong Kong with loud traffic and noise like that, but a mere 45-minute ferry ride from downtown Central in Hong Kong, you can be out here on Lantau Island in this exotic, to me, tropical paradise. I'm sitting by the side of a cycle track, what they call a cycle track here, little road, bicycles only, and I'm in the middle of a field. Amongst these birds is a woman farming across the way. There's mountains on either side. And there are all these lovely villages, all connected by these cycle tracks. First time I've seen individual homes, but even here in the villages, you see apartment buildings, small ones, maybe 4 or 5 units in each one. And in a Chinese tradition, you'll see them built in a circle around a common area, paved over, where you'll see kids playing on bicycles or playing basketball, and people sitting around talking in groups. There's tables and chairs, and people eat dinner together outside, and the weather's always really nice here. As I said, it's tropical. I got here by boat, as I said, It landed next to a lovely beach, bars, restaurants, and a million bicycles. There's a parking lot just filled to the gills with bicycles. So I walked in, I rented myself a bicycle, and I went for a little ride, and I ended up in this beautiful place. A place that's largely car-free. It's Bikescape Paradise. I think I might have to ride back down to the beach to get myself a beer after I sit here for a while and just absorb this great moment in my life. And you lucky Bikescapers get to share it with me. Beautiful songbird you hear is Yao Li singing Riding Bicycle in Spring. Well, it sounds like I'm still in paradise, but I'm actually in the small conference room at Inkworks Press in Berkeley, back at work. Nasty economic times. Business is hurting, just like everywhere else. Please send us your printing, inkworkspress.org. Send us your printing, keep me going. Reality is hitting me on the head really hard right now. But life goes on. And things are still cooking here in San Francisco. I'm just going to keep those birds in the background. I'm still there. But San Francisco does go on, and the injunction is going to be lifted pretty soon. The injunction that keeps us from building any new bike lanes or any kind of bike facilities, even a bike rack, is off limits right now. But the EIR is about to come out. It's the draft EIR came out at Thanksgiving, and they're taking comments from the community, and the final draft is going to be out in the spring. It's going to be certified, and the judge should lift the injunction, and that's when the real fun starts. A lot of people think that as soon as the injunction's lifted, we're going to build the 58 different bike routes all over town immediately. Within a year, it'll all be there, and we'll have bicycle paradise. Well, no. More reality, all of this has to go before the neighborhoods and the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association, the Richmond Planning Association. All the neighborhood associations are all going to come together, and some of them are going to like it, some of them aren't. And we're going to have to go through the whole process of trying to get this, each of the 58 different little projects approved, so that we'll have an uninterrupted network throughout the city of San Francisco. So to kick off the biggest project, the biggest bicycle project that the city's ever embarked upon, the Bicycle Coalition had a big membership-wide meeting over at the church over on Octavia near Market Street, and over 175 people showed up. It was a very successful meeting, and everybody's charged up to get going on this new campaign. So let's go there right now. I came in a couple minutes late, but we came in maybe about a minute or two into Executive Director Leah Shaham's remarks.
And joining this campaign to win all 56 by, does anybody know? By when? How crazy am I?
2 months.
Bike to Work Day, middle of May. Really, really soon.
Leah, that's soon.
That's under 3 months from now.
That's under 3 months from
that's
now.
That's insane.
That's why tonight is so important. That's why we're so glad so many of you are here. And that's why we're calling this a campaign. I want to be really clear. I don't know if I'm still buzzing from the Obama victory or what, but we know the way that happened, the way that the things, I think, changed in this nation over the last, you know, year or so is at the grassroots level. That wasn't all about big money and D.C. politics and such. That was about the grassroots. That was about people going out and getting involved in their communities. And that's exactly what this is going to be, even more grassroots. Getting involved on your neighborhood street, with your local businesses, meeting your neighborhood group, getting to know the local publications in your community, and really, really championing the bike cause. That's what we're going to need everybody in this room and about 10 of your friends with you to do. So we're really excited to have you here. Thank you so much. By the way, we're bringing more chairs in, so don't worry. We will have more chairs. And I am going to hand it over to your program director, Andy Thornley, to walk through kind of where we've been, where we're going, and especially what we're going to do tonight and what we're kicking off.
Cool. Thank you, Leah. The Big 56. Good. I am going to shout at you so the folks down front will get your hair parted. And the folks in back, I hope you can hear me. I also hope you can see this. Come up later and take a peek or get your opera glasses out or some such. Let's jump right in. San Francisco has a draft bicycle plan. Yay!
Yay!
That's not a bad thing. We've had a draft bicycle plan for a while. It hasn't become the real plan lately. It was the real plan briefly back in 2005, but for the past few years we've had an injunction that has stopped all physical improvements for bicycle circulation in San Francisco, even signs. Insane, crazy stuff. On the right, you see a facsimile of the cover of the draft environmental impact report that has been prepared on the bike plan. It's about 5 or 6 times longer in page count than the plan itself. And if you haven't curled up with a bike plan EIR, treat yourself to a lovely weekend. It pretends to estimate the hypothetical worst-case impacts on the environment that might come from implementing that bike plan, chiefly inconveniences to individual motorists. But the point here is that it's the key to getting out from under the injunction. The judge said, your bike plan was adopted imperfectly. You must perfectly adopt your bike plan, and you must bring it up with a good environmental document. We've got a pretty good environmental document. It is already, it has had its comments. The comments are being responded to now, and pretty soon it's going to come back to the planning department, and the planning commission is going to certify the EIR, which will permit the city to readopt the bike plan, and that's going to get those handcuffs off. Let me talk about one of the big parts of the bike plan, and you guys know the biggest part of the bike plan is the bike network. A lot of times when I'm talking to folks about the bike plan, their eyes glaze over and say, well, it's really the network. And I don't know if folks in the back can see, this is what your bike network looks like right now, courtesy of the MTA graphics department. The red lines are bike lanes, the blue dots are sharrows. The 56 projects in the bike plan, when implemented, will cause this to happen. Before, after. Before, after. Kind of cool, huh? And we can just settle with that. We can just kind of have the AV trip. But we actually have to go have this stuff happen in a real world. Look at how the whole board lights up. Well, here are the 56 projects, and talk about tiny type. Even the folks down front probably can't read. All 56 projects from 2nd Street to Townsend Street Holy cow, lots and lots of projects. How are we going to get anywhere with that? Well, those are the projects that were analyzed in the EIR as short-term projects. There's more in the bike plan than just these 56 projects. There's more in the bike plan than the network. There's a lot of great stuff. But what we're focusing on tonight are these 56 projects. These are the ones that, once that draft environmental impact report is certified and the plan is adopted, there's nothing more to stop the city from going ahead and implementing all of those projects. Whoops, I'm getting ahead of myself. So here is your list of 56. Some very exciting projects on the list. Project 3-2 is your Masonic Avenue. Shout out for Masonic. Sunday's Examiner, hot story, torn from today's headlines. Project 5-6, Cesar Chavez, South Mission, in the house. Next week, we're going to have a meeting about this, right? Come out for that.
Can you remind us, when is the Cesar Chavez meeting next week?
Tuesday.
Tuesday night. If you're also interested in Chavez, come out to the city's community planning meeting for that. Ask us to find out more.
Project 7-3, one that I'm very fond of. This is what Project 7-3 looked like yesterday. I think this is Levi right here. That's Project 7-3. So some really excellent projects in there. So here's what it comes down to, people. Your mission is to convince these seven people. Forget him. We don't care about him so much. This is your mayor. Here is your Municipal Transportation Agency Board of Directors. They are the people who say yes to traffic changes or no to traffic changes. Used to be the Board of Supervisors controlled that. Old timers remember, we spent a lot of time lobbying the Board of Supervisors. We still care about the Board of Supervisors, but basically the whole enchilada, the whole Big 56 comes down to a yes from those seven people to all 56 network improvement projects by Bike to Work Day. That is your mission. Are you up for it?
Yeah.
All right. All right, now, we've taken that route map and we've broken it up because 56 is kind of a lot. It's hard to get your head around it. And you've probably seen, if you looked at the website, we've got them around the back of the room. We've divvied up those 56 into 9 areas. The avenues, Bayview Shoreline, Central, North of the Panhandle, Downtown Soma, Mission Upper, Mission Lower, Northeast, Portola, and Southwest Side. You're sitting at a table right now, and that's great because each of those tables represents one of these areas of the city. And if you didn't mean to sit at the table, that's okay because we need you there. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But to make this possible, to make this conceivable, we had to break it down. So we've broken the city into 9 parts. So here's what that list looks like. Still kind of makes you blink, but it's not quite as impossible. There are 5 or 6 projects in mouthfuls. And this is going to be the secret to conducting this campaign. We've got to have a whole network. I don't want anyone to lose sight of the notion that the network is the thing. A block of bike lane doesn't really count for much. It's got to be continuous, and it's got to be safe. That's right in the city charter. Safe and continuous bike route network. But if we break it down into these 9 mouthfuls, we can do it. So yeah, we're gonna now turn inwards a little bit. Each table, let's find out what your projects are.
You don't have to live there, you just have to care.
And with that, everybody filed off to their neighborhood tables and volunteered to do the door-to-door, street-by-street work that needs to be done. So if this sounds exciting to you and you would like to be a part of this big project, it's not hard to do. Just give the call 431-BIKE, the Bicycle Coalition, and ask what can be done. Or you can go to the website, sfbike.org.
Je siffle la bicyclette. Je siffle toujours.
Okay, well, with that, we are going to end this edition of Bikescape. It's been a pleasure yapping at you for the last 49 minutes and 96 seconds. I have more material. There was a meetup of bike bloggers in Sacramento at the kickoff of the Tour of California bike race. And I have some interviews, some interesting stuff. I had a nice chat with David Bernstein of the Fredcast, who got to tell a story about riding in the Mavic car with all the techies during the race. Talked for a while with Paul Dorn from the Bike Commute Tips blog. And I had a nice conversation with Fritz from Cyclicious, one of the great Bay Area blogs. And I got some ideas of what makes him tick. So I think I'm going to include that in the next podcast, which will be up in the next few days probably, because it's pretty much ready to go. Just got to tag some music onto it and get it going. So until then, you know how to reach me. But in case you don't, it's bikescape@sbcglobal.net. You can go to the blog at bikescape.blogspot.com. You can see all the archive shows there and leave messages and comments and have some lively dialogue with other Bikescape listeners. You can also leave a message on the Bikescape hotline, area code 206-338-5704. Leave a message, maybe it'll be on the show. You can also become a fan on Facebook. Just started this about a month or so ago. We're up to about 50, 60 fans now, I guess. I haven't looked in a while. But if you want to be a Bikescape fanboy or fangirl, just go to the blog, click on the link. Oh, I guess that's about it. So, as I usually say at the end of every show, get out there, ride your bike. But whatever you do, however you do it, make sure you take the lane. Bye now.